Welcome to Cottonmouth Manchester, a podcast brought to you by Citico, the city centre management company for Manchester and Salford. I'm Vaughan Allen from Citico, and today we're talking creative entrepreneurs, the trials and tribulations and successes. We're at Blueprint Studios in sunny Salford, and I'm talking to Barney Ibbotson and Stan Chow. Barney and Stan have both been freelance illustrators based and working in Manchester for the past 15 years and more. Barney's worked with some huge corporates, including the BBC, Sage and Conrad Design. Stan's worked with Saatchi's, McDonald's, and found relative fame with a New Yorker image of Donald Trump that the Donald complained about. He also provides the designs for the best Chinese New Year celebrations in the country, which modesty forbids me from saying who organises. Citico organises. To begin at the beginning, guys, how did you get started? Barney?
Starting off, I suppose it's just a natural progression from being interested in art at school and then going to college, foundation course, doing a degree in graphic design, and then got to where I am today through a long-winded kind of journey, which took in quite a few different things. So I was, you know, I was actually initially kind of like temping and sort of doing the odd factory job and then kind of working in a catalogue company in the production department there, working with designers and getting kind of experience, but not directly, not direct design experience, but kind of learning lots of bits and pieces. And then I had a job as a designer in a small company where I was, again, learning on the job, learning all about, you know, designing for print and kind of just working to deadlines and all kinds of things, but not really illustration. At the same time, I was also in a band which Stan used to manage, so it suited me kind of
at
the time.
No,
we were in school.
We were at school, yeah.
Yeah, oh, okay. We were at school together, so we know each other since we were like 14. We met over, you know, some pencils, you know, in a life drawing.
So that was
class.
Always a shared interest.
Yeah. I mean, I think we first get chatting in while we're drawing like a still life.
Yeah, is the like art exam.
GCSE.
Do you remember which still life it was?
I don't know.
It was Bowl of Fruit, I think.
Yeah, and we're listening to Pixies and Della Soul.
Yeah, and talking about music and stuff. And yeah, and we've been mates ever since. And, you know, we've both sort of gone very different ways of getting to where we are, and like I said, Stan were kind of like more direct way of getting there, and mine was a bit more convoluted. So yeah, I sort of had a job as a designer for about 8 years or so while I was in the band, and then we quit the band, we kind of packed in the band, and I sort of decided then to sort of, I wanted to kind of focus more on the illustration. And actually Stan plucked me out of my job, which was a good thing, because it's one of those things where you want to go freelance and it's quite...
But you're earning a wage and it's...
You're earning a wage, you're comfortable and it's a risk. And Stan said, come work for me. Yeah, we didn't want to pay me much, but, you know. I know. And I was like, oh, yeah, fine. It's great. Yeah, I'm... That's
so it wasn't necessarily a desire when you were on your foundation course that, yeah, this is what I'm going to do as an independent on my own designer illustrator.
I think when you're that age, you're not really clued up about how... Well, I wasn't. I know some kids today are, but I wasn't. About
it's
how
like
exactly...
YouTube channel.
Yeah, no, yeah. But I wasn't clear about how my interest was going to manifest itself in the real world. You know what I mean? It was very much a case of like, well, I just want to draw pictures and design things, and I wasn't quite sure how to go about it. So, and I made some quite bad choices in terms of, you know, just, you know, courses and decisions point in my life, you know. But yeah, so ultimately it was Stan sort of dragged me out of my sort of 9 to 5, and we started working together for a bit in his studio, and I was kind of, I guess, helping him out on a lot of projects that he didn't have time to do, and I knew a bit more about design and web design and stuff, so I was kind of, you know, that was a plan. And actually at the time his work started to dry up, so we kind of ended up just collaborating on some stuff, which was really good fun, you know. We did some work together and had a little exhibition. And that got me out of my slumber, myself. Because you kind of, I remember Stan saying to me, "Oh, you know, you're not thinking creatively anymore. You've been in an office too. You've been in a, you know." And I was like, "Yeah, you're right." So after a while, Stan had to sack me in the end, but because the work wasn't coming in, and he was like, "Right, I can't afford to employ you."
It's 2007-08 recession, just wiped us all out, really.
And you were about to become a dad as well.
Yeah.
At that point, how long had you been independent?
I've been independent since I left college.
So you took that more direct route than that.
I was getting work literally whilst I was still in college, basically, and then it became easier because within a year of leaving college, I found an agent, and then the agent was getting me some work. You know what I mean? It wasn't getting me enough work to actually call it profession, which is why I ended up DJing and also managing bands as well, you see, like the band that Barney was in. And like for about 10 years, I was getting a bit of work here, DJing here, trying to get the band, you know, signed. And then, as I say, that didn't quite happen. DJing wasn't drying up. I had to make a decision between, I was gradually getting more work, and then it became a decision about 10 years ago whether I actually spent more nights DJing or actually concentrate fully on illustration. And because ultimately illustration was what I was really good at. That's why I just carried on down that route, basically.
And then presumably it picked up again after the recession.
Yeah. Well,
how long did that take?
Mm. About a year and a half, really. Oh. Yeah, I literally had a year kind of like around 2008, 2009 with no work at all whatsoever, which was really kind of scary because just before, I thought it was all kicking off for me, really. I mean, I was getting really busy. And then it just went...
And that was the year I started. You know, started in the year of the recession.
But luckily,
as a freelancer.
A coincidence there.
Yeah, yeah. It was very slow at the beginning.
So, I mean, between the different things that you were doing, you were making a living from your work.
Well, living, from DJing and working as an illustrator and sometimes helping mum and dad's chippy. All these kind of, you have to do all these things, you know, just to kind of survive, really. It was a case of survival back in the like late 90s.
So at what point do you think, how long into your career were you when you actually started making a living just from the illustration and the artwork?
It was probably around about maybe about 10 years in, really, where there was no more DJing now, no more late nights. And then cause I was getting big accounts, as I started working for Vodafone, did quite a lot of work for like BBC, and then ended up, also did some work for the White Stripes, which essentially was the catalyst for my kind of current fame, so to speak, really,
And what about you, Barney? How long did it take, eventually, for you to start making a living from...?
A couple of years, about 3 or 4 years. I mean, I was getting work in, but they were kind of smallish clients, and I was spending a lot of time on stuff, and wasn't lucrative enough, I was actually, I didn't feel like I was properly doing it, until I started getting more regular work and kind of bigger clients. And so, I think it was about four years in, I'd say, till I felt very comfortable and I wasn't like looking at my bank account all the time,
Waiting for insufficient funds to come up every time I get to cash. Does it take a time? Because you're waiting on commissions or you're going out and selling yourself. So do you ever get to that point where you're just confident that there will always be something around the corner? There will always be another phone call. There will always be... Or you're always thinking, actually, 2007 might happen again,
Well, at the moment, it's you never know, do you, politically and with what's happening. And but I don't know. I think the fact we're in Manchester, which is a booming city, and there's a lot of opportunities, that's quite reassuring, I think. But I mean, at the moment, and for the past sort of 3-4 years, I've had constant work, and you get to the end of the job and you think, I've got no new work lined up, and you start to worry a bit, and then you get like three emails on one day or a phone call, and everything seems to come at once, and it's, and that you breathe a sigh of relief. But that's not to say I'm complacent, because it could dry up. But
my worry is come the start of every year, if there's no work ready, like for me when after the Christmas holidays, I start to panic basically. And then but literally, the minute you sit down on your desk, it's like the phone rings. Yeah. But I do have that constant panic at the end of Christmas basically. The new year.
Yeah.
Right. It could just fall apart. About 5 or 6 years of it being really good, it's gonna have to end at some point. And I usually just assume it ends.
I think it'd be all right.
You see, this is it.
Yeah, but I think you're at such a level that it's like, I don't know, you're always gonna find work, I think.
I think that is interesting though, talking to freelancers. I was a freelance journalist for like 10 years. And how many contracts you have, how many contacts you have, and that this magazine is going to give you a couple of pieces a month. There is that thing of, particularly when you take a holiday and then you're not going to get that check at 4 weeks on or 5 weeks on because you took a holiday, of actually, what if they stop? Although there's an editor changes, or an agent changes in your field. You know,
yeah, not
it's
exactly.
Like, are they going to pick you up as, in the same way that the previous people did?
Yeah, well, that's actually funny enough. That's the issue I'm having with the New Yorker. They just had a change of art director, and since he's been in, it's like no work from them basically. I mean, which is it got in because it's always like, you know, working for the New Yorker for me has always been the Holy Grail, you mean?
Yeah.
And being in it consistently for like 2 or 3 years was great. And then the New York director comes in and is like, don't need you. You know.
As a subscriber to the New Yorker, I was reading for ages and ages, and I kept on seeing those end of article pieces and going, that looks a bit like Stan's work. And then Alex, my deputy, went, Stan's work.
It's everywhere.
Now we will do links to portfolios and websites and stuff on this, but how do you actually describe what you do?
Describe what I do. You mean to?
Or do you just point
to? You mean how do I market myself?
Yeah, exactly.
On my website and then to people I meet and things like that. I just tell them I'm a freelance illustrator, stroke designer, I guess.
Do you describe your style at all?
I usually just show them my work. I'll describe it, and if I start spluttering, I'll get the phone out and go, "This is what I do." Okay, and that makes it a lot easier. You know, that's the thing. You document your work all the time. You always got copies of your work on you. So it's just nice to be able to just show people, and if they're interested, you know, or boring people, but
look what I do.
But for me, it's like you know, like social media's been a massive thing. You know, it's, like for me, I use it every day, and to a certain degree, all the banter I use on social media is just a form of self promotion, basically, and trying to get people interested in my work. You know. And I mean, I talk a lot of nonsense on it purely just because, you know, nonsense brings people in. You mean it's like clickbait to a certain degree. You know, idea is like, you know, you talk about, hopefully you talk about something that's interesting or
not.
Yeah, exactly. And then, but people are curious of what you said, and then hopefully they'll go
make
to the link.
To, yeah,
yeah, yeah, you mean it. That's what I do. That's what I have to do every day. You mean it. That's what I feel I have to do that every day just to kind of keep, you know, to make sure work doesn't dry up for you, you know.
Just keep the profile going. Do you feel you've got like a handle on the business side of things, and how hard did it? I mean, as creatives, that's always that classic thing of, well, I didn't really think about that, and I didn't think about tax, or I didn't think about national insurance, or you know, all that basic stuff. Did it take you a while to get a handle on, you know, you are running a business as well as doing the illustration side of things?
A little bit, but it was as soon as I got the you know, the tax and the self-assessment, all that sorted, it was kind of, you know, I was relaxed, you know, I was like, right, that's all in place now. I wouldn't say I have much of a business brain, but so I'm quite, I don't know, when people say you're running a business, I don't see it as that. I see it as just people employ me to do a job for them. I don't know, I wouldn't say I run a business yet, but I do, but it doesn't feel like that to me. So I'm not really very good at that side of things, but I'm quite organised. So that's, I mean, I know a lot of creatives that aren't organised and don't like the admin. I don't mind it so much, you know, I'm quite organised, and my dad knows a lot about kind of, you know, finance and
creatives classically struggle with cash flow, I think, in terms of
cash flow,
lumpy payments,
definitely.
A large amount of money, and suddenly,
I'm in the middle of one at the moment, actually. Yeah, it's just like waiting for a payment to come through, that can be difficult, because you know, often big companies don't pay you for weeks and weeks, you know, and if there's a glitch in their system, that's what they say.
You check in the post.
then you know, you can end up getting paid. You know, you've forgotten what the work was by the time you get paid. So that can be tricky. But
for me, I do run mine like a business. You know, it's like, I mean, because I am a print shop that is a separate kind of job in itself. You know, I have to hire people to kind of work for me.
Yeah,
work the print shop. My accountant comes in like once a week now. So she kind of keeps me on, you know, up, you know, on how I'm doing financially, basically, you know. In the sense of me, I don't really kind of see it as a business, but there's other people there that kind of
need to.
Because
presumably you desperately don't want to detract or take your time and thought away from the creative side of things, which is what you want to do and what actually sells.
Because you're hiring employees as well, an employee, so you've got it's completely different kind of organisation to mine now, you know.
having to deal with those employee relations at the time. Can well, be very
it's,
wary.
Yeah, it can be, but we've got a nice balance now. You know, it's good. Yeah.
And you talk, Barney, obviously, about issues around clients not paying on time and so on.
Yeah.
I mean, that side of the business thing, chasing for payment and making sure...
Hate it.
You know, that must be the worst bit of it.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, it just takes up valuable energy and time, negative energy. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just like, why should I have to be doing this? You know, it's out of order, especially when if it's something like a few hundred quid or something, you know, and it's a massive organisation. And you're just not a priority then in terms of the payment. So, I hate doing all that kind of things. And I'm not too keen on initiating jobs as well and trying to, like, you know, when you get an inquiry, it's great, I've got an inquiry, but I find the process of, you know, negotiating and all that kind of, I find that a bit sort of, it's not really what I want to be doing, but you have to do it, so... You got to look at it as positive as you can, really.
Do you get your accountant to do it?
Well, no, I've got me. I've got an agent.
He's got an agent.
Okay. I'm lucky. I've got an agent dotted around the globe, so they kind of do all that kind of nonsense for me.
You just get the money in at the end of the day. Yeah. As long as the agent is then paying you, you're all right.
Yeah.
Do you think there has been a thing? I mean, it's certainly, again, coming from the journalist background, one of the big issues with the web over the last 5-6 years, even more, has been people actually, because of blogs, and they expect you to write for free now. And so, you know, journalists who used to get even paid, you know, 10p a word, which isn't an awful lot, are expected to write for free. Are you in that situation as well, where people actually are trying to beat you down constantly and say, well, why would I pay you however many hundreds it is when I could go to fiverr.com and get something for $3.99?
Well, the thing, like, it's like for me, like, I'm in a situation where I want to, it's like quantity over quality, you know what I mean? And quality over quantity, actually, yeah.
Other way.
Sorry, key
distinction.
Quality over quantity. Because I want quality clients, you know what I mean? And it's like, I'd rather have, like, one good client than 50... like 50 other people paying me like next to nothing, really. I mean, you know, and like ultimately, it's like I don't think people like who want to kind of pay less money will go to me anyway. I think I'm in that situation where it's like you know, you want a Man United top, you can either buy a knockoff one, we can buy the real one from the, you know, I mean, you know, I want to be working for the person who wants to buy the real one.
Not to get you onto, you know,
that's pretty much kind of. You know, the situation I'm in terms of them. I don't think people with no money probably won't come to me anymore because they know that I'll just say, this is my budget.
I suppose as soon as once you say you've got an agent as well and go to the agent, then that's a different professional thing. Do you find that?
I don't really get it so much, actually. I used to occasionally earlier on, I think, but I think probably I'm not at the same level professionally as Stan, but I think once your work gets about a bit and people look at your website and stuff, they kind of, I don't think they ask for free work, you know, but you do occasionally get people who, you know, don't understand how much design costs and, you know, they want a logo and a brand identity and stuff and they've got £100 and it's like,
but there are clients who can't do it for that. There are clients who exploit it though, like especially with younger artists, you know, and it's up to the younger artists to kind of
fresh graduates get whether
the exposure's worth it or not, you see, you know, sometimes it is. You know, and as I say, the client will actually exploit that. You know?
Yeah.
And but the point is like if you do the free work, you get the exposure, and then you kind of use that exposure. Mm. Then it's to some degree it's worth it.
Yeah. You know, I've done free work, especially early on, but it wasn't somebody approached me. It wasn't for like commercial purposes. It was for exhibitions or, you know, a kind of event, and you know, they want people to contribute a poster design or something.
So like that. Playing a benefit if you're in a band.
And also things like charity events as well. It's like by doing a lot of those, I met a lot of people in Manchester and I've got my work out there, and obviously you get your work exhibited and people come see it and your name gets about and your work gets about, and that helped me greatly, you know. And I think if you choose to do free work on your terms, then it can be, you know, quite beneficial to you.
I think as a beginner, as a starter in a lot of these sort of trades, and I was talking to a friend who's a personal trainer last night, which is a similar thing, learning where you pitch your price point and not being afraid to pitch it higher than you probably think, rather than looking around you and going, well, everybody else is charging £10 an hour. It's like, well, how can you live on that? You know, you have to work 80 hours a week, whereas you know, is a hard lesson to learn, because unless you have an awful lot of confidence in yourself, it's a very hard thing to go, no, actually my work is worth a lot more than people are prepared to pay a lot of the time.
And it's still quite, I still find that quite difficult. And I still sometimes wonder, am I charging enough, you know?
Yeah. Finding that right point.
Yeah.
Do either of you have to deal with people copying your styles? And how do you deal with that?
I don't.
Well, I do. And it used to be a cause of concern when I was younger, you know, because I was still trying to establish a style. And before I've even kind of nailed down a style that I'm working on, somebody's already ripped it, you know, because it's already done well. Now, without sounding too egotistical, after doing it for like 7 or 8 years now, this same style, I'm beginning to feel like I've almost kind of inspired a generation of new illustrators, basically, you know. I mean, it's like, if you look at music, I remember back in the 90s, when Oasis kicked off, they were doing well, and then when I started working at Night and Day, DJing at Night and Day, 9 out of 10 bands would sound like Oasis, basically. You know, and I think once you see something that's successful, it just becomes
ruined it for everyone, didn't it?
But it was, because I'd be DJing after the band, it's like another band that sounds like Oasis. You know?
Yeah. No, I remember that from being in the band.
Yeah, but before it was a concern, and I felt, and it used to knock me, but now it's like, now I'll. It's, for me, it's I must be doing something right then, you know, I'm flattered. Sometimes it knocks me if they're too close, you know, if they get too good, you know, because
they're working in precisely the same area.
Well, some of them completely rip off his work, like it's almost like they've just lifted his work off the web, and then he challenges them, and they say, oh, I'm a big fan of yours. I'm really inspired by you. And it's like, it's a bit more than that, though, isn't it?
But now I'm less affected by it now, though, you mean?
Because once you get to a certain stage, it's so recognisable as a style, even if they're copying it, because it's obvious that they're copying it.
I generally have to thank my reputation, so to speak, you mean? Because I'm quite kind of, I've got quite a big internet presence, basically. So it's easy. So when someone does copy me, they instantly know they're copying me, as opposed to somebody producing their own style. So, you know, I think that's the important thing. That's the point I've reached now, where people can instantly see.
Fans of stands will kind of rally, you know, against them. They can be like hounded off the internet by stands followers.
The Twitter hate.
Some people are such a bad time. It's the point where I really feel sorry for you, man.
I have to say, for the first time, I think it was about 3 weeks ago, my family home isn't in Manchester. Stan did a beautiful piece of work of my wife and my two kids for her birthday a couple of years back, which hangs in our living room. And for the first time, somebody came around who I don't think has ever been to Manchester and went, is that a Stan Chow? Yeah. And I was like, oh,
yeah. Right. Yeah, that's it.
Yes, it is, and you can buy the original. I think one of the things is we've seen over the last, 10 years, 15 years, obviously, is this move to the freelance economy, the gig economy. So, you know, you just have to walk around the Northern Quarter, see the coffee bars that are just full of people working on web design and development and illustration and so on as well. I mean, are you aware of that increasing level of competition? And how do you deal with it?
I don't know. I don't think I don't know. I just stick to what I'm doing, and as long as I'm getting the work, I've kind of, you know, I'm focused on that. Really, I think quite a couple of years in to being a freelancer, I learned how to just ignore competition. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Which is also a really important lesson to learn.
Yeah, because you can at the start, if you don't believe in what you're doing, you're constantly looking at everybody else's work and like, oh, what if they get this job? And, oh, I can't draw like them, and I can't do this, I can't do that. It drags you down, and it did for a while for me. I was just obsessed with like not being good enough and like looking at everybody else's work. And you get to a point where you just think, right, well, this is what I do. I believe in it, and I'm just going to get on with it. So for me, I don't think about that at all, really, you know, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I'm pretty much the same, but because I live in a bubble, basically, my work life. I mean, I see other people's work around town and stuff, but, you know, I've I've got this superiority complex now. Like, because I'm so busy. You know what I mean? Yeah. This is it. I'm so busy. I'm in my own little bubble. And it's kind of, you know, even... I forget to see that that they are competition, if they are competition at all. So, you know, that's the position I'm in. And I'm quite lucky because I'm not... I don't think we're fighting for work in the same areas, you know what I mean? Because I'm pretty global now, you know what I mean? And half my work comes from the States, and when I go over to the States, they actually see me as competition. It's like, oh my God, this guy from Manchester is like taking all our bloody work, like, you know. So, it's quite.
Is that true for you? But where are your clients mostly from, Barney?
They're mainly local, actually. Yeah, I get the odd distant one, sort of random ones. But yeah, a lot of it is Manchester based, Northwest based. Yeah.
I guess there's the argument that more people working in the area suggests there's more work, which actually, if you're good enough and can...
Yeah, well, I think there's enough work to go around if you're good enough and you know enough people, and that's it. I mean, you can be lots of people who are really great, but if you haven't got the right contacts, then you won't get the work. And that's something I realised as well quite early on. That's very important about who you know.
Do you feel part of a design and illustration, a creative community in Manchester?
I'm very aware that it's there, and don't get me wrong, all my mates are creative people. All the people I seem to go out for drinks for are all designers and illustrators and stuff. But it's weird. I see them as just my mates now, and we don't really worry about the business side of life. I think everyone just gets on with. I think we're all talking about our kids, really. You may know, I am anyway. You may know. There is a community in the sense that everyone I hang out with works in that area, but it's, they become friendships now as opposed to kind of being a community.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's similar for me, I suppose. But I like, there's a lot of the people that I've met since I went freelance are, you know, involved in design and, you know, that side of things. I've met so many people over the past sort of 5-6 years. And it's really nice to go out occasionally and just, you know, see these people at events and kind of, you know, just meet up and discuss your experiences. And obviously, you don't just talk about design all night, but you know, it's
not very tedious. After
yeah, but I mean, I work at home on my own, you see, so it's nice to actually. So you don't have that kind of work nights out and work sort of banter and all this kind of thing. So it's nice to know that there's a lot of people out there that, you know, that you can. Sort of chat to them, you know, and kind of like sort of make it feel like you're not just, you know,
explains the growth of the co-working spaces, is that people actually can get very lonely when they're just sitting at home.
And there's a lot of advantages of those kind of setups, and, you know, I mean, the studio where Stan is, I mean, there's a whole load of sort of smallish creative businesses, and everybody in there knows each other. And when I go in to see him, it's like I know everyone in there, and it's nice. Yeah. It's a nice feeling.
And in that sense, there is a community there. You know, but also within that community, like we were talking about competition before, none of us seems to be stepping on each other's toes. Even though, despite there's about 20 different designers in our building, we've all managed to find our own little. Yeah. Issues, really.
Yeah, because that could be dreadful if you're overhearing a phone call to your agent and somebody else is going, oh, I could undercut them on that.
So there's not that going on.
That's it. I mean, I know loads of illustrators and designers. You know, I don't feel like we're competing. It just, I don't know, it's a lot more friendly than that, isn't it?
So the classic final question then, guys, is what would your advice be to people who are sort of starting out on this path now? I did send the questions out beforehand, so they should have brilliant answers.
I know, but that's always difficult, that one, isn't it? Because everyone is different, and advice doesn't really apply to everyone.
No,
it can just depend on how your life set up, your opportunities, whatever. You know, I don't think everyone takes a different path to get into this industry. I think if you were to give blanket advice, it'd just be like, believe in what you're doing, and like I said, don't get caught up with what everybody else is doing, and just try and believe in what you do, and like just make sure you do as much work as you can, and kind of try and improve your skills and stuff like that.
Having a definite identity about what you do, presumably.
Yeah, definitely. Because again, that's one thing I realize. It's like people are hiring me to do what I uniquely can do.
Yeah.
You know, that's they see my work and go, yeah, that's Barney's work. And a lot of clients hire me for a particular style. And it's like recognizing that that's what you can contribute. I can't do caricatures like Stan can do. And Stan doesn't do the detailed kind of stuff, the linear stuff that I do. It's like it's you have your own kind of thing, and I think you just need to promote that and believe in that, and that will, combined with as kind of a good network of people, that should get you, you know, some work and should help you to succeed, I think.
Took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And on that point of agreement, thank you to Barney and Stan for joining us, and to our friends at Blueprint Studios for hosting us. We'll be talking to more entrepreneurs based in the city centre over the coming months. If you have any comments or ideas for things to cover in the future, you can talk to us on Twitter at CottonmouthMCR or through email on podcasts@cityco.com. Cottonmouth Manchester is available on iTunes, Acast and SoundCloud, or direct from the source at cityco.com/podcasts. Please leave a review if you like what you hear. Give us some likes, people. Until next time.